out. It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
Hey, Denise, how are we going?
Hey, good morning, Laura. Good.
Oh, good to hear. You excited for your weekend yet?
Oh, yeah. Crossing my fingers for good weather. It's a lot colder, isn't it? I just really noticed that, especially at night, getting the extra blankets. But that's all right. It's winter. We expect it.
I am in the same boat. I have my electric blanket going constantly right now. My power bill is rising like crazy.
So on level 1, 2, or 3?
It's on 3. 3 constantly. What? No, I get so cold. I can't. My house is cold. I need that insulation for my landlord.
Well, I have to admit, nothing beats a good electric blanket. But number 3, that's pretty keen.
Yeah, I'm definitely happy in a warm bed. So I guess we'll jump on to the first thing I want to talk to you about, which is the Rate Your Council campaign.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and you're kind of spearheading that. So where did that idea come from?
So listeners may not know, but I'm a former Auckland councillor myself. Mm-hmm. Was in that role before I became an MP. So what I've done here is launch, together with my National Party colleagues, a website called rateyourcouncil.nz. And it's pretty straightforward. It's a platform, it's a survey, online survey platform, where people can feedback their experiences with council. As we know, there's a lot of roadblocks and inefficiencies. So some may want to express their experience on that. Others may talk about things that have gone right. But either way, we've got multi-choice questions, and then we've got a nice big blank box at the end so that people can tell us their stories. The reason we're doing this, Laura, is that we inherently know, because as MPs, a huge chunk of what we get through our offices are council-related issues. And often people upset or feeling like they haven't got the experience that they would like as ratepayers. And so we're wanting to hear, it was central government that set up the super city. If it's not working, we want to know why.
Mm. Well, I guess there seems to be, from what you're saying, a breakdown in communication between the council and the people. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's probably a number of factors, but certainly it's something that council should pay big attention to. Look, their own survey, they use Colmar Brunton polling outfit to survey themselves. I know from the last quarter of last year, I haven't been able to see anything else since then, but only 19% said that they trust Auckland Council's decision-making.
Wow.
So somewhere along the line, there is a huge disconnect. I don't think Auckland Council should be afraid of us asking the questions, because we are genuine that we want to figure out what central government levers we have to help with the situation.
This is kind of a personal anecdote for me, but I was at dinner last night with my friend, and he was talking about the freedom camping and how in Omaha you saw the majority of people voted against freedom camping. I think it was something like 90%, where council just instead implemented free range freedom camping. Why do you think those kinds of things are happening?
Well, you've got 21 local boards. And so that's a whole lot of governance structures in Auckland, and of course they all went out for consultation for each of their own areas on that particular topic. And then the governing body, or that's the other term for the 20 councillors and the mayor, are the ones that put the final say and have final stamp on most things. Look, area by area is in each topic, it's dependent on that, Laura. What I know, freedom camping was very similar to dog bylaws, you know, when and where you can walk your dog on a beach. You'd go from one local board area to the next, and it would be a totally different time, a totally different set of rules. These are the sorts of things that just don't help with trust, right? People want consistency, they want good communication, they want to know how a city is working for them. And what we understand and what we know by council's own admission and their own survey is that things aren't working as well as they should.
Mm. And National has kind of copped a bit of flack for this. So some people have insinuated that you are attempting to influence the mayoral election. What do you have to say to that?
No, no, not at all. I mean, it would be weird for us. It's a good idea for us to ask Aucklanders what they think about their council while awareness is heightened with an election on. If we went out and asked people in March next year, I think that would be unusual that we're out in central government year asking about local government. So we're taking advantage of the fact that people are saying, hey, what's happening in governance? What's happening in Auckland Council? What's happening with the way that our cities run? What's my experience with it? And then it's going to be up to us, right, to figure out what we can do from central government. A lot of the answers do need to sit with Auckland Council. If they've got issues and issues that could be fixed easily, they should be doing it. Mm. How can we help with that? So what this is, I think, is an incredibly beneficial tool for us, but also for Auckland Council, because we're a government in waiting, and we're wanting to get onto solutions.
Yeah. Shifting on to our next subject, which is New Zealand voting rights. So we've had some changes there, and National has kind of spoken out in opposition to people being able to vote on the day. Why is that?
Look, the opposition is really clear for us, Laura. It's the way it's been done.
Yeah.
So this is extraordinary breach of convention. We have never gone out and run roughshod over the top of other political parties on something so fundamental as the way that you vote. You couldn't get anything more fundamental for Parliament and all of its parties to work together on the way that you vote. So the only way that we found out about this, it's extraordinary, the only way that we found out was that one of our team was asking a question in Select Committee the other day, and they asked a, you know, sort of a factual, almost unintentional question, and out it pops that Cabinet's made a decision, and they made a decision with the three governing parties, left us out in the cold, and on something so fundamental as how our country is run. It really set a dangerous precedent.
Mm. So your concern is more about how this decision went forward rather than the actual choice?
Well, look, we've got an issue with the choice as well. So allowing enrolment on the day, we think there's a massive risk with that around uninformed voting, spur-of-the-moment voting without having a solid understanding of who the parties are, how it will affect your life. Let me put it this way. For those who are enrolling on the day, why haven't they been able to enrol in the prior 3 years? If they aren't motivated in 3 years to get on a roll, how much information would they have gathered to make an informed choice, to understand what the political parties are offering and to be informed that way? That's a real risk.
I think that potentially has a danger of patronizing to people, insinuating that just because someone isn't enrolled prior to the day, that they haven't been engaged politically. Wouldn't you say that's a fair comment?
Well, not really, because the Electoral Commission is constantly, I'll just call it chasing people, trying to get them to enrol on the electoral roll. So this isn't just something that's casual and, you know, near the election, or, you know, how about you pay attention to, you know, the little orange man that we all know, you know, their little mascot that they use to get people enrolled. When you move any house, we all get asked by the electoral roll to sign up. It's sort of a fundamental, it connects to the census, it connects to all sorts of things. So I think it's reasonable to say, hey, we want everyone to be engaged for 3 years, not on the day of an election. And now we've also got different locations coming online, supermarkets and so on. So, you know, we're just saying there's a massive risk around uninformed voting. Do we really need to do this, or is this something that advantageous to the three governing parties who sneaked it in?
I guess the other side of this, though, is this could potentially aid in democracy, because everyone's opinion matters, doesn't it?
Oh, of course it does. No, no, of course it does. And we're not arguing with that whatsoever. We're arguing with how it's been done and why we can't work harder on a 3-year engagement, not the day of.
I'm going to shift on to the last thing, which we might just touch on briefly, but the Maori Pathways pilot. So this is a program attempting to reduce the number of Maori people in prisons. National has kind of come out saying that the lack of a target for this program is problematic. Can you tell us a bit about why?
Well, it's $100 million of public money. And at the very least, we should know what impact it's going to have. And even if you can't come up with that, then at least tell us what the measures are that will be used. All public money should be accounted for. You know, it doesn't matter what program it is, it should be accounted for. Now, we know that there is a massive issue in Māori reoffending rates. But what you've got here is a program in two prisons only. And we're saying, how about spending $100 million in a needs-based, evidence-based way, letting it be going to programs that go to all prisoners who are in the most need. $100 million is fantastic for those who are really in need in prisons, but until we see some more evidence on this, it just feels like you're throwing money at a program, crossing your fingers and hoping it'll work. That's not really the way that public programs should run.
I guess in terms of targets, I think particularly with reference to the government's exclusion of a target for reduction in suicide in New Zealand. Is there ever going to be an appropriate target or an acceptable target for Maori prison rates?
Well, the government actually has set a target, Laura, of reducing the prison population by 30%. And what we're saying here is if you're going to back that up and stand by it, then how come we don't know what the measures are for this particular $100 million program? So if they themselves want to hit that target, well, then how come we can't find measures or even know what they intend for the impact to be on a $100 million program? That just seems very pie-in-the-sky type decision-making.
I'm just going to jump on to my last question. So I'm worried that I might have asked you this already, but I am curious. What's your star sign?
I'll answer in a different way if you have.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you can because it's kind of a single answer, but what's your star sign?
Well, Sagittarius.
Sagittarius? What are the characteristics of a Sagittarius?
I was born in December. You know what? I'm not a big study of star signs, I have to say. I know I'm shooting an arrow.
You're shooting an arrow. Is there a horse involved, I feel like? Is that something?
I feel like there's a horse involved and I'm shooting an arrow.
Well, you
can unpack that any way you want.
I mean, I know a couple Sagittariuses in the news team. I don't know what that means, though.
Well, it means that we're awesome.
Yeah. I mean, everyone in the news team is awesome. I'm a Gemini. So no one trusts me.
Really?
Yeah.
I can think of a friend who's Gemini. I trust them.
Oh, that's good. I mean, well, most people just call us Two-Face since we've got the dual personality thing.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Well, I'm glad you don't think so. Well, I'm looking forward to speaking with you next week, Denise.
Yeah, all the best with your studies.
Thank you. You have a good weekend. Bye.
Bye.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.